A taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
Hi, I'm Ed Finn, and you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. And my special guest this week is chef, restaurateur, and famous for his award-winning restaurants and appearances on the Great British Menu, Niall McKenna. Pleasure to see you, Niall.
How are you?
Did you like that bit at the end there?
Oh, Jesus, that was a long... had a full head of hair then. That was a long time ago.
Oh, well, that looks suits you now, I think.
Yeah, bald, shiny head. Yeah, that's good.
Difficult times for the hospitality industry and the food industry, Niall. How are things?
It is what it is. I think we're all in the same boat, no matter what you're into now. But being realistic, it's, every day's... as long as you're waking up with a smile, you know, and I keep on laughing, you know, it's just like, can you believe this here? How far down the road and we're still in the same place? But it is what it is. We just get on with it, and that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you're no stranger to challengers over the years yourself anyway. I mean, you started, give us a little bit of history into, your background. How did you start off? Where did you get your love for food from?
Being realistic, love was many years ago. I started with Paul Rankin. Started the Nadrian actually when I was 16, 17, and then worked in Roscoe for Paul Rankin at the very beginning. So yeah, Eugene Callahan, Darren, Robbie Miller was all in the kitchen. So I was like 18, 19. And then I went over to London, did my whole time in London, did the whole bit in London. And then I came back home. So I came back home when I was probably around about 30, 31, I came back home and opened up James Street, around about 31, 32, opened up James Street, South Up. And that was my first restaurant. But my love for London was always there, the restaurants, the change, the buzz. And missed London dearly. Like, it was hard work. It was really hard going. But I absolutely loved that hard work side of it. I mean, somebody said you're doing a 16-hour day, 17-hour day. To me, every day you were laughing. Like, you know, you came out of work laughing. And some of the guys you work with were just amazing. For some of the funniest, craziest people I met in my life. And that's the part of the game, part of the industry I love, because everybody has to be a bit nuts to be in it. You know, and I mean that in the most beautiful way.
Yeah, I interviewed John Healy from the restaurant program there and Susie Street recently, and he was telling me some stories about it. He didn't seem to sleep at all ever.
No, but half the stories you could even say. you can't broadcast, because just some of the people I work with have just been amazing.
You learned to cook from
being
your granny, was it?
Yeah, my mom, and I'll be saying this here, but like, it was 12 my granny's house, and like, she could make like a ribs and cabbage is amazing. But it was just that whole thing, and always bake it on a Sunday. And then my mom and my dad, and we were very, very lucky to have at the background I had when I grew up, where food was all part of it. Entertainment was all part of it. Mom was always having parties, and it was always about the center table. And like, even like, every one party was a suckling pig in the middle of the table with an apple put in it. And that was my mom. And that's where, and then she had her outside catering firm, and that's where it kicked off from. And that was it. And then this love of it. It is the food part, but it's also the social side of it, you know, the hospitality side of it. And that's the whole thing. Even though I went into the kitchen, I love knowing, like, who was in, what they like to eat, remembering what they like to eat and all the rest of it. It's like, if you come into James Street and we know it's your birthday, there's a big card sitting on the table and all the rest of it. To me, the whole thing about it, restaurants, is the hospitality side of it, where you think the customer, I'm trying to make their day something very, very special.
I've been lucky enough to eat in a good few of your restaurants, and you can chat about the different ones because each one of them had such a lovely different theme to it.
Very different.
The hospitality you talk about there, that's incredible. And it's in the last those 15, 20 years up here in Belfast, it's just exploded.
See, for the size, like, the population of what, 180 or 280,000, and it's just amazing, like, the quality of restaurants we have here, from all, like, from places just doing burgers to, you know, ourselves, to Michael, to Stevie at Ox, Gareth at Muddler's Club, even Chris out in Wine and Brian and Mora. We're really lucky to have such, like, so many chefs who, like, especially Chris, who I worked with in London, who went to London and then came back, and then like Stevie and Gareth, who worked with me in James Street, you know, there's a wee pool of chefs, and you mean, you look at the quality they've done and how great they've become, really. That's the way I look at it. And I love going around to the restaurants, all the restaurants, purely because the atmosphere is great, the food's great, the service is great, and it's a good night out, so you come out with a hangover.
And I mean, in terms of James Street South, I know about 5 years ago, Niall, I went and I did a course in your cookery school. And I think it was upstairs. And I learned how to make the most amazing scrambled egg and smoked salmon and lamb and just simple stuff. But it was, I felt I was very accomplished after it. And it was so enjoyable.
Whenever we first opened the cookery school, I thought to myself really stupidly, we'll do the food we do in the restaurant. I learned very quickly that Joe Public can't do it in one day. So a class was supposed to finish at say 3:30, was finishing at 5:30. And I was going into the kitchen at 6:00. The start service. So I was like a Burbus or Arsh, you know, and I was like, friggin' hell. So we changed it where the food was very simple. And then everyone's got those like 5-6 dishes they keep on doing in the house. I want them to come to the cookery school and then go up to 10, up to 12. So what they learn to do is like learn how to saute, learn how to braise, learn how to steam, you know, use a slow cooker, all the rest of it. And so whenever they do learn the basics, then they can develop and develop it on. And people come to the cookery school and say, oh, I can't cook. It's me. Everybody can cook. You know, there's some have been very challenging, some have been very gifted, but it's just the way it is. But to me, it's getting that palate, get the tasting, understand about the seasons, understand about the quality of the product. And to me, that's where, like, I love doing the cookery school in James Street. Like, we're in the process now where we've got another cookery school over in Hill Street. It's called Waterman House Cookery School. And I think that's what the name's going to be, but more than likely it's going to be that name. But it's sitting there ready to go. It's sitting ready to go, but because of COVID, we can't open it. So we're looking like, hopefully early next year we'll open it if things change. And we're virtually doubling the size of the cookery school, and it's state-of-the-art cookery school. But to me, we're talking to Joe Public, and you're getting them really into food and getting them fired up about food and getting them to believe in themselves. And the most important, getting them to read a recipe. Don't wing it. There's the recipe. Go by the recipe. And then when you get more creative and you get a feel of it, then you can start going off into things. You know, and to me, that's start with the basics and then build yourself up. And that's the key thing that I do. And then plus with the apprentices we have in the rest, we've got an apprenticeship scheme we've been running now for about nearly coming into 7 years now. We also bring them into the cookery school as well. So they're learning as well. And then Dave, my head chef, myself, Kerry runs the cookery school. And then we have guest chefs coming in. So to me, it's trying to get that whole circle going of food, quality, local. You know, the whole thing you'll hear all chefs saying. But to me, that's what I'm trying to do. And it's not hard. It's not rocket science. But it's just enjoyable.
The apprenticeship scheme is really innovative, Niall. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? Where did you get the inspiration, or where did that idea come from?
Like, it was really because Joanna and myself were looking at it and said, we can't get the quality of staff. And I'm a real one from, bringing within out, if you know what I mean, bringing people who we have trained up. And I've got all these chefs coming in and they've been trained in certain ways, but they haven't been make me some bread, make me some souffle, make me some pasta, do me a bit of fillet and fish, and they can't do it. And they can't get the basics. And these guys are like, say, 24, 25. And then I've got one of my apprentices at 17, 18, who's blown this Rex's guy's here, because this kid can do souffles, can do this here, do this, butchery, fillet, and so I can actually weigh something out properly. You know, go and read a recipe properly and do it so it's consistent. But there's a lot of chefs out there who are just not trained properly. And that's my biggest issue. And I was just sick and tired of doing it. And then Joanne says, why don't we just do an apprenticeship? So at the very beginning, we still pay for everything ourselves. We don't get anything from anybody. We put them through college ourselves. We pay for their equipment. We pay for everything themselves. So by the time they're finished after their year and they do their exams and all the rest of it and their maths and their English and all the rest of it, they come out with a qualification. Then, and not necessarily I take them all on. So it could be 1 year, first year we did 12, we realized that was too many. Then we went down. So around about 6 a year, we try to bring in. This year, we've only brought one on purely because of COVID. But we try to bring them in. And then at the end of the year, the whole way through, we say to them, we are not guaranteed you're going to get a job. We are only going to take the ones that suit our business. Not necessarily the best chefs, but the one who fit in. Because one thing I don't want in the kitchen is have a massive load of egos, load of creative people. You can have so many creative, but at the same time, you need the workhorses. You need the guys who are the backbone of the kitchen. And that's, like, I would describe myself as, I love being creative, but I'm one of these guys who can just, I can work. And I can, let's go for it. And I want to create the two. Somebody creative and somebody who can actually work methodically, work to the clock, and work organised and cleanly. And to me, that's what I try to achieve coming through. So if any of our apprentices come out from us, they've been trained in our kitchen. Because the way they work, and it's just the way I've been trained by Gary Rhodes, and when I work for Tim Payne at the canteen and all the rest of it, and Dean Carr at the Avenue, and guys like that, they were really, 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 really good organised chefs. And people said to me, who was the most organised chef you ever worked with? And I says, there's only one, Gary Rhodes. Gary Rhodes was like, I mean, like Pierre Coffman, great chefs and the Roux brothers, Marco and all the rest of it and Gordon. But see, when it come to organization and like this guy knew what he was doing the following year, it was OCD wouldn't be the word for it, but he was totally organized on what he was doing and methodical and consistent. And that was the key for him. And what I learned from him, and I thought I was going to go and work for Gary for, I'll do 6 months with him, see what it's like and all the rest of it. I was there for 2 years. And in London, and that time there, you just wanted to keep on learning. But what I learned of him was organization, business, understand the value of a pound. And that's the whole thing. So it's all about doing your stock takes, your GPs, your margins, all the rest of it, your training, your hygiene, all the things. And then how to make a really good stock, how to make really good puff pastry, how to make really good bread, and how to everything came in the bone, how to fill it, how to pin bone properly, and what is good quality and what is bad quality. And I was really spoilt in that kitchen because we were just like the GP was great. We didn't too many pressures on it, as long as no wastage. But it was just, that's what I learned. And every day was just like, we had like every day you had 20 chefs looking to work in the place, so every day you were going through like, oh, somebody else has gone. They were just churning through the chefs purely because nobody could keep up with the workload, and that's when you were doing your 15, 16, 17 hour day. And then all of a sudden you were given a bonus of going to work, going by in the market. So I then got the job of going 3 days a week to the market. So I finished work at 11. I was home for 12. I got up at 3:30, be in the market for 4:30, and then going to do a day's work. And that was your bonus. And I was just like, how does that work out? You nuts. So by about 8:30, 9:30, the wheels came off from work. And they sent you home at 10 o'clock because you knew something was going to happen because you were just absolutely exhausted. But those are the days you turn around and think, this is absolutely brilliant. And that's what I loved about London and about the restaurants. And the great thing about what I remember about London was, even though you had like say the 25, 30 restaurants that everybody wanted to work in, they all spoke to each other. Everybody talked to each other. So you're going from what you always knew somebody in one of the restaurants who worked there, you've worked in the past with. So it was a really good surround. It was a place called the PM Club where all chefs went to. And you walked in and it was like, you just knew everybody in the room. And that's the thing what I missed about London most, is where there was great communication. In Ireland, not so much. Like Paul Flynn and people like that there, Eugene Callahan, Dylan, all the rest of it. But there's some great chefs down south, like unbelievable chefs down south, and I had a real, Paul Flynn had a really great opportunity to work on for a short time, but he was one of the great chefs.
Yeah, Paul was a guest on the show a couple of weeks back.
Like he was a fabulous legend, and legend, yeah. And legend in London, so he was.
Now we'll continue with this because it's really, really interesting. I mean, this is a masterclass in how to be a successful chef. Yes, but your first choice of music this evening, Niall, Ocean Colour Scene.
God, I just love these guys, and then all their music. I just love their music. I love their live, and then especially when they bring a banjo in and all the rest of it. It's just amazing.
Never saw it as the start. It's more change of heart.
A taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hi, you're listening to A Taste of Ireland with my special guest this evening, Niall McKenna. Niall, that was really interesting what you were talking about. I mean, it was almost like for me a masterclass in how to be a chef in the way that I suppose not everybody gets to be lucky enough, I suppose, to be under a Gary Rhodes or to be working with a Gary Rhodes.
I would say like it's people with the same mentality as yourself. And it was so many different restaurants in London. Like Nico's was like that there, even whenever Mark was at the canteen, It's about surrounding yourself with the same type of person. And the great thing about, London and Dublin, it's not even so much now, but then it was where everybody went there to improve themselves. But I don't think you have to do it now because especially in Ireland, you've got like in Galway, you've got JP in Galway and you've got such and such and such. All over Ireland, you've got great chefs and good training kitchens. But then it wasn't like that there. 1994, 95, 96, 97, in London, that's where everybody went to. Like in Europe, they all went there because there was just so many restaurants opening, closing, changing, all the rest of it. So to me, it was just one of those things. I just wanted to get out of Belfast at that time. I wanted to go over to London. I wanted to do it. And my wife now, Joanne, was moving over. She just finished Queens and says, just turn around me one day and says, I'm moving to London. I went, all right, fair enough then. Is that us finished? And she went, if you want to come, you can come. So that's how it happened. I went over and then I went from there, and it was just surrounding yourself with the same mentality of people. And that's where you learn, because they push you on as you're pushing them on. And that to me is the key. And then if you're going to the right kitchen with the right sous chef, he's going to develop you on as well. Now, don't get me wrong. There were some arseholes I work with in London, and you mean you couldn't like them if you tried. But in general, like to this day, like Wayne Tappasfield, Ray Brown, you know, there's guys out with Dean Carr and all the rest of it. And you've never heard of these guys, but these are legends in the kitchen industry because they are the guys who make the money for the restaurants. You had all your like TV chefs and all that there and on some of the big profile and all the rest of it. These are the guys actually running the machine.
And Niall, did you decide Belfast was the best place to set to open up your restaurant, or was it like in London you'd be a sort of a small fish in a big pond, or what was the thinking behind Belfast?
It was one of those days you don't have a good decision. You know, you turn around to myself and went, right, what am I going to do? I want to go back home. And at this point here, we just bought a flat in London. We just got married, and then I said to my wife, I'm going to move back home. And she looked at me, we're just bloody married. We bought a flat. Are you serious? And she went, yeah, there's opportunities. And I look at Belfast, how it's coming up. Looked at Derry, looked at Dublin. And I thought to myself, no, mum and dad are here, family's here, we look at it, there's nothing really in, there's Roscoff, there's Dean's, there's nothing really in Belfast, but they're real foodies, because think about Belfast, people travel, you know, they really do travel, so if they're not flying out of international or city, they're flying out of Dublin, and they love travelling, love their food. And I remember that from the Roscoff day, you know, Paul Rankin said they really love their food, so I said, right, I'll try Belfast. And we didn't have a lot of money, we didn't have any money actually, being honest. And Ed McGrath, the architect who did like all Paul Rankin's restaurants and Kay and all the rest of it, Aidan was our architect on it. And then he introduced me to art. And he says, what art are you putting on the wall? And he says, me, what do you mean? What art am I putting on the wall? And I says, you have to put art on the wall. And he says, what the fuck do I know about art? Nothing. So he introduced me to a guy called Yamshid Federeski, and then the guys in the Curlin in Dublin and all the rest of it, and David Crone and all the rest, all Mark Francis and, you know, Phelan Megan and all the rest of it and all those guys. And then we got into art. And that was it. So our restaurant was really known for borrowing, stealing and buying art. Really, you know, we did everything to get art on the wall. And that's how we, the love of restaurants, food, the arts and everything came about. And that was like 17 years ago. And then through Aidan, we sort of really got a love of it. And then our clients came in and they looked at the art. And it's like going down to even Paddy Gilbo's in Dublin and you look what he has in the walls and you go, oh my God, isn't that beautiful? You know, and if you go to, you know, Chapter One as well and with the stuff they have in the walls, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, no, amazing. Actually, Ross, I went to school with Ross and he was another guest on the show. Yeah. And it's amazing that, isn't it, actually, how the surroundings now, I mean, it's just the whole experience, yeah. Niall, and that it's creating that like escapism almost, isn't it?
It's Emerald One. It's like, you mean, certain restaurants, I'll use Chapter One as an example. Like Chapter One's a beautiful restaurant and I love where it's situated in Dublin. I absolutely love it. But like, you know, the wee room they put underneath the road in the far corner, like it's a wee booth, wee cavern. It's just beautiful. But you look at the room, it's got the linen, it's got everything. It's got a crazy wine list, like huge, amazing wine list. The food's beautiful. They spend the money. And the one thing I learned, even from Chapter One and everywhere in London I worked, like I never wanted that real plush what they had. Original James Street stuff was white walls, wooden floor, white tablecloths. It was like sitting inside a sugar cube. That's what it looked like, with really good Irish contemporary art on the walls. But to me, the most important thing, one thing I learned from London, from, you know, Chris Bogger, my old boss in London, everything you touch has to be quality. You know, from the knife and fork to the plates to the glass, anything the customers can touch has to be, even from the, like in the toilets in those days, we had Molden Brown in the toilets whenever, like Molden Brown was something special. Not saying it's not special, but you know what I'm saying. But, and to me, it's all about the quality side of it, you know, for the customer. And that's what, and even now in James Street now and in Hatskey's, the quality of the glass, the quality of the cutlery, even down to the steak knives, you know, like what I spent on the steak knife per steak knife. But our staff found out, I said, they have to be counted in and counted out every day. None of them go missing. You're paying for them. That's it. But it was just the quality side of it. And that's one thing I've always learned the whole way through. Because even with James Street now, we've changed the side. One day I was sitting in the old James Street South And it was like we said it was fine dining because I had linen on the tables. The only reason I had linen on tables is because I couldn't afford decent wooden tabletops. So I had to put linen over a chipboard, round chipboard, and that's screwed the tables. And that's what it was. And then the old boutique, a place that did all the furniture, like really beautiful, Zenata and all the rest of it, furniture, we bought the chairs off them and they were just amazing quality. And this day we still got them. And it was just one of those things. We just turned around and said, well, let's keep it really contemporary. Let's keep it really clean. And that's how James Street all evaporated. And then one day I was sitting in there and I said, Joanne, I am totally bored of this restaurant. And then Hart Hastings turned around. And at this point here, we'd just done like a £150,000 fit out of the restaurant. And then 2 days later, he walked past. He says, I've just bought that building and put an hotel in. And I'm going, oh, Christ. And he turned around and said, what do you think of that there? And at this point here, how many years off? It's 2 years off. So I says, I'm going to have to change my whole restaurant again. And Joanne says, why is that there? It's purely because it's going to 350-bedroom hotel right on our doorstep. People will not want to eat in this type of restaurant. What they want to do is fine, high-quality, casual dining. So what we decided to do is 2 years later, just before the Grand Centre was about to open up, we then changed the whole company. We merged the Bar and Grill and James Street South into one, two private dining rooms, made the restaurant bigger, put the kitchen in the middle of the building, we're ready to go. So we were absolutely flying. We're cookery school on the top floor, PDR doing 40 people, the grill room doing another 40, and then you had the restaurant going. So like every there was Tourette's in the kitchen, and every chef was about to have a heart attack. It was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, so that's where we came from there. And that's how we developed. We changed the whole standard. So it was like a French brasserie, American steakhouse, but with really good wine list, really good quality product. It was all about the product and knowledge of service, friendly staff, atmosphere, crack, buzz, you know, and that's what I love. I love going into a restaurant now, and I'm not a real fan of tasting menus and all the rest of it. I want atmosphere. Like everybody laughs at me, he says, what restaurant do you love in London or in Dublin that gives loads of atmosphere? It's me. When I want something spicy, I go to 777 and I ask for a beer and I get a margarita. I use milk of a beer and another margarita sits down. And no matter what, it's just simple. I mean, spicy South American Mexican food, but it is just the atmosphere in it is absolutely just brilliant. And there's so many restaurants in Dublin like that there. And in Belfast, to me, it's all about atmosphere. It's all about the crack. And that's where we try to get it. And he says, why don't you put soundproofing? I just mean, I want it loud. I want it buzzy. I want it where it's churning. And that's where James Street came into its own. And then after that, then we went into Hatsky's.
Yeah, and I mean, for anybody who hasn't been, again, Hatsky's is a wonderful, it's in a fabulous location. And again, the menu completely different, of course. The concept, Niall, if you explain it a little bit, maybe.
Hatsky's was sort of like based on, there's a restaurant in Barcelona called Peps. And it's like a small, tiny restaurant, HS behind a bar counter, banging out classical Spanish food. You've got stools. And then there's a person standing behind you waiting for you to get off. You know, you can feel him burning the eyes in the back of your head. Any chance of hurrying up and getting off the seat so I can sit down. And it's just that whole, you know what I mean? And it's not pintos or tapas or anything. It's just classical, you know, classical fish in the bone, all the rest of it. I wouldn't say they're small plates, in between small and main course, if you know what I mean. So most people go in there for about 40 minutes. Joanne and myself were in there for 2.5 hours. I ate the entire menu and the guy couldn't believe how much I was eating. I said, it was that good. And I said, Joanne, I want to do this in Belfast. I need to find a site in Belfast where I can do stuff from this type of restaurant here. I love the Basque area as well, San Sebastian, Bilbao. I love that there. I love Normandy and Brittany. I love that style of food as well. And then classical like Irish food. And then on top of that there, then I love Italian food. So I was really trying to think Northern Italy, Northern France, Northern Spain, Northern Ireland, and all the Northerns in there. And that's the type of food I was doing, looking at. And then we decided, and then I was walking down Commercial Court. There's an old place called Printers. And as a rule, when I open a restaurant, I don't try to take over a restaurant. I want to open something fresh, get the change use and do something that's never been done there before. But it was such a good site. It was right beside the Duke of York, who Willie Jack owns, who's a good friend of ours. And I said, God. So I went in and says, do you fancy selling your restaurant? And they sort of looked at me and went, okay. Give it a week or so. I was being really cheeky.
The timing was right, wasn't it?
The time was there and that was it. It was perfect. So we opened up then and that was it.
That's amazing. And I mean, Niall, talking to you here, I mean, the creativity kind of bounces off you, right? I mean, do you ever stop thinking about what restaurant is going to open next?
We've opened up restaurants. We have closed restaurants. We have done that. We opened like a cast and crew in Titanic, but that was only for 2.5 years.
That burger was amazing there, by the way.
But it was good crack. That was my idea. It was Joanne's idea. But I said, like, Joanne says, we've never done like this type of food. Let's try it. So some days we were doing like 350 out of this tiny wee place. And it was good fun, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And we had a license for 2.5 years on it. And I said, you want to, I said, no, I don't want to do it anymore. You know, and then a friend of ours took it over and they've got it going. But I mean, it's trial and error. You move on and you try to stay within the perimeters of what you're passionate about doing and enjoy doing. And I won't do anything what I don't enjoy. No matter what, if I don't want to do it, I won't do it. But I have to enjoy what I do.
Fantastic. Now that brings us on nicely to your second choice of music this evening, David Bowie.
Gene Genie, it's one of those classics and I just absolutely adore it.
A Taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine. 106.8 Sunshine. 106.8.
You're listening to A Taste of Ireland with my special guest this evening, Niall McKenna. Niall, you have cooked for some serious celebs, right? I'm just looking at Lady Diana, Prince Charles, Liam Neeson, Jamie Dornan, very popular. Come here, Liam Neeson. I suppose if he wasn't happy, he'd hunt you down and he'd never play.
Yeah, I tell you, Liam was one of the. It was actually Liam's nephew worked with us, and Liam came in. He was filming over in Belfast, and he was virtually in the restaurant 3 days a week. And he was just one of the absolute gentlemen, total wine buff. In those days, he was a total wine buff, really into his wine. You were into Californian wine and classic French, but. He was one of the absolute gentlemen, very tall, but by God, he could drink. You know, he could drink. He could go for it, no problem. You know, but over the years we've been very, very lucky in the restaurant in Belfast because there's so much filming going on in the town. Like even like and every day when the Game of Thrones is getting filmed, we had every day at least 2 to 3 of the cast in the restaurant, the earpods on, reading the script, sitting having something to eat, and they were just left alone. And then the directors were always in James Street. Only thing was the actors were never allowed to go into James Street. That was his space. You stay in next door. But over the years, and then actually that's really one of the reasons the cookery school set up, because they were constantly coming into the cookery school and trying different things and all the rest of it. But the last meal they had all together in Belfast, I was on the night of the rap party, and one of the actors phoned me up and said, can you get us a table for 10? And we were fully booked that night. And he said, the only thing I can offer you is the cookery school will do a big table and the chef's table up in the cookery school and I'll cook for you. So 5 minutes later, brilliant, went up to 12. 10 minutes later, went up to 15, then 20. And he said, you can't do any more than 20. So we ended up doing 22. And I thought it was just the crew and stuff like that there. At that point then, every major actor from the Game of Thrones came straight through in, into the door, sat down, we did their food up, they sat there, they were drinking, they went for it, and HBO were paying for it, so they were fine, and they put up these two massive tapestries, which they got for the two directors, and they had them hung off the wall for gifts for them, it was amazing, and then all of a sudden, somebody must have tweeted something out, so we looked out the window, and I went, there's a crowd gathering outside. And I looked out again about 20 minutes later. So it was about 300 people outside the restaurant waiting for all the actors. So they had to get from our restaurant to the waterfront hall, and they couldn't get a taxi in. So they all had to leg up the road to the waterfront hall to get in. But they were absolutely total gems coming into the restaurant. They were just, every one of them was absolutely special. The only one was the guy who was the bodyguard. No, I think it was the Swedish guy, the big massive guy. Like he could eat the leg. Like, he could eat two tomahawk steaks, no problem. He had the biggest appetite I've ever seen in my life.
That makes me think of Belfast, really, how it has come on. I mean, now you've seen it come on, right, in the last 15 to 20 years. But I mean, the likes, I suppose, of things like you mentioned there, I mean, Titanic, Game of Thrones, The Fall. Wow. How has it changed for you over the years?
To me, it's totally changed. To me, when we first opened, like, everybody has an understanding with Belfast, it is a very, very small place. You mean the population, the city, and as I keep on saying, I say this all the time, that's our strength. Our size is our strength. But for how the size of the city, for what we have achieved, for what we have done over the years, especially in the past 15 years, it blows my mind. You know what I mean? For what Visit Belfast has done, what tourism's done, Tourist Board have done, it's been, and Food NI has done, it's been unbelievable. you know, the Euro Food, everything else, MTV Awards. That was, I mean, these were all game changers. And a lot of, like, Dublin and all the rest might think it's big. But for us in this city here, it was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, you have more and more trade coming from down south, coming up, which is very much appreciated and is absolutely amazing. And it pushes us on to get our standards up as well. And the more tourists we have coming in, they demand more. And the more they demand, the better we're going to get. But Belfast at the moment now is just happening. And especially where we are at the moment with COVID, it's like a ghost town, same as every city is in the world. But to me, coming out of this here, you mean, Ireland as a whole is going to have a massive bounce, you know, for tourism and everything else. Belfast is going to have a massive bounce, you know, and Derry as well. And, you know, I mean, Galway, Cork and Dublin. And, you mean, everybody has to be going the same direction. Get everybody on this island, get them coming up the north, get them coming into Belfast and then really going for it. And we get everybody talking together and getting one message going out. And the word message is, yes, we can do it. No problem. Let's do it.
The other thing now that impressed me when we met originally and we made a program about the Year of Food and Drink that was going on up here. You impressed me a lot about the produce. It genuinely is incredible. In terms of the beef, the salmon, the fish. I mean, it's great to be running restaurants here. You have a lot of this on your doorstep, don't you?
A lot of our stuff. Like when I say our doorstep, like everything we use stuff from Gabeen, from West Cork. I mean, our cheeses and all the rest were from throughout Ireland. But up here, we use Drains Farm for our dairy. It's absolutely amazing. We Sturgeon Meats, Peter Hannon, you know what I mean? The meat merchants, Ewing's, Keenan's, like everything is on our doorstep. And that's throughout Ireland. So it doesn't make a difference. But up here, you know what I mean, in Northern Ireland, it is, you know, we are spoiled because the one thing they hate doing up here is saying how good they are. Now, don't get me wrong, there's people up here who say, and throughout Ireland as well, and the UK and all the rest, there's people say they're really good, and being honest, they aren't that good. So to me, if you're going to say it, you have to be that good. But up here, there are some really, really good suppliers, especially Espini and stuff like that, doing their charcuterie and all the rest of it. We are spoiled, and our oysters and all the rest of it. But we are spoiled. And you mean, we just have to get people eating more fish, more shellfish, eating local, quality product, you know. And I always say to people, like, how cheap has food got? You know, because I think people, it sounds really crazy when I say this here, people like go out to restaurants too much. It's at the moment now, it's how cheap can you do it? And this is through delivery and stuff like that there, where people are just going out and they're buying, like, how cheap can we do it to make a profit? You know, to me, that is not my thing. It's just, this is the price, this is what we're doing. And we have never, over the years we've opened, we've always stood by that there. You know, it's not about how cheap you can do it. It's where the quality and give them good value. That is the key thing. But to me, it's not how you can cheap yourself. And by using good quality product, it's the whole chain line. So your suppliers are getting money. I'm not trying to battle them down so they don't make any money because they won't be there at the end. And throughout this whole COVID thing, they are probably my biggest concern. Because at the end of the day, I can cut my orders down. I can keep everything as tight. Because what we get in is what we use in the day goes out. We don't hold stuff. Like Gary walks into our restaurants and says, is that your fridge? Me, that's it. Comes in, goes out, comes in next day, goes out. So it's always fresh, you know. But our suppliers are like my veg suppliers, my meat suppliers, my fish suppliers, my cheese suppliers. They're the ones I actually worry about most because they're the ones who are really feeling the pain, you know, and especially whenever governments are not giving enough notice. You know, a week's notice isn't enough.
Oh, sure. Listen, I mean, some it was 6 hours at one stage.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You know,
I mean, it's no respect, really.
No, it's and I've said it so many times now. You have to give the industry, you know, respect. Like, you look at Guinness and all the rest of it. How many kegs of beer they threw away and all the rest of it. And you mean that is? I mean, people can say, "Oh, tough," and all the rest of it. But that's coming off a business's bottom line. So for a business to move on, you have to have a good communication. And that's where the politicians and the medical side have to join up together to get that message out. Because if they're forecasting it, you have to give us notice. Because you just can't say, that's you done. Because our staff, our suppliers, the whole picture. Now, even after we close down, we then have to reopen a couple of days early, pay all our staff to come in, get all our suppliers in. What do we get in? What do we don't get in? We have to get prepped up, ready to go, and we have to open. And just before, at the same time, you have to do a total deep clean, everything else. So to me, it's that whole communication. You just can't switch a switch and or a light on and off you go. It's all about communication.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that Christmas will be good, Niall, for you and for lots of your colleagues. What do you love to cook yourself?
Well, like, I love a good leg of lamb. And to me, in our house, it's like a Sunday. And this is true, but this Sunday coming up, most Sundays we have a like classic roast chicken stuff and roasted hares, all the rest of it. Everybody around the table, nobody's allowed to leave the house. Sit down, open a bottle of wine, and that's it. It used to be friends coming in. So you're putting three or four chickens on and the big table. We've got a big table in the house, and everybody just wheels around, elbows out, and gets stuck in. You can't do that now. But this Sunday, actually, you know what we're ordering in? We ordered from Wine and Brine one of their Chateaubriands.
Oh,
no, sorry, Beef Wellington we ordered, sorry. Beef Wellington we ordered, I do apologise there. A Beef Wellington, one of Chris's Beef Wellingtons, which are absolutely amazing. So this Sunday, my wife has spoilt me and she's ordered a Beef Wellington in from Wine and Brine.
So you don't have to cook the pastry or anything?
No, it's all done. Chris done it all. I'm spoiled. And I says, really? Yeah. Oh God. And so that's what we're having this week. And I'll do everything else. I'll get everything else, do dessert and all the rest of it. But to me, it's the Sunday lunch or evening, should I say. And that to me is the most important time. But I just... anything at all. Like I our kids are great. No, they're real foodies. Are actually Charlotte, my youngest daughter, starting to come a foodie. My son's like, he'll have a go at anything. He loves sushi, loves sashimi, loves oysters, or has a go at oysters. Wouldn't say he loves them, but he just like, you ask him how he wants a steak, all of it medium rare. And he's like 13 years of age. And to me, that's the key thing, getting the youth into food and getting them passionate about food. You know, it doesn't have to be something, they could be a good scrambled egg or, you mean, a Thai noodle or whatever it may be. It could be something very, very simple, but to me, it's the passion of them tasting something different, from a bit of spice to this, to something very like cabbage and bacon, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're making my mouth water here. Anything done well is
happening. It is. Come a here. Good burger, good club. A guy always go to the hotel and my son says, "Dad, I'm going to room service in Boston." And he says, "Okay." And he says, "What are you going to order?" I know what he's going to order, club sandwich. And I'll always look at it, like, you always look at a hotel. A, their breakfast, how good their breakfast is, which is the most important thing in a hotel. And to me, how good to do a good club sandwich. And that's it. And to me, you mean, and I love a good club sandwich. And it's something so simple. But if it's done well, that's your benchmark. So you know you're going to have something special.
Brilliant. And listen, for people that love Christmas, including myself, are you a turkey and ham man or traditional?
The way I do it, I'm a bit of a weirdo. What we do is I do the crown of chicken or crown of turkey. And crown of turkey, we put stuffing down the middle, we roll it, and then we bake it slowly through the oven, and then I slice it down. Do it that way there. And so I have a crown done, and then we do a turkey as well, and then we do a full ham. Because normally, like my record at Christmas in the house, I think was around about 30 people one Christmas. My wife invited her family.
It's a lot of stuffing.
My wife invited her family. I invited my family. We didn't communicate too well. And Joanne says, "Oh, I invited my mum and dad and the whole family." He says, "I've invited mine as well." So it was like tables and chairs coming from the restaurant up to the house. And it was great, but it was not a day off. But that's how we are. But we usually have around about 12 to 14 people in the house at Christmas. But this year we can't do that there.
Come here. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. You're so uplifting and your enthusiasm is infectious. Your last piece of music tonight, Niall, Paul Heaton and Jackie Abbott.
Yeah, I love Beautiful South. You know, Paul Heaton is just one of the best songwriters going. They played in the Ulster Hall and I just thought they were amazing. Yeah, they're just amazing singers.
Niall McKenna, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on A Taste of Ireland.
Have a lovely Christmas. First time saying that.
Thanks, the same to
Take
you.
Take care, bye-bye.